Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 105 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of Inter-Venezia, which finishes 1-0 by the grace of God to the hosts, a goal from Lautaro Martinez in the 65th minute. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Gianni Paterno. Gianni, they say misery loves company. So who do we have here to share in this misery with?
Yeah, we had to bring on the third member, really. I mean, I think it's official at this point, right? He's practically family to us here. We had to bring on Nick Diani from Kicks and Picks Pod to be able to share in this misery with us, because maybe he'll be able to talk us off a ledge somehow. I don't know if he'll be able to do it, but we'll see if he can do it.
No promises. Glad to be back, boys.
Yeah, our team is higher up in the league, but based on performances, I feel like you're a little bit happier with what's going on with Lazio than we are with our club.
Definitely happy. Above my expectations for where I thought they'd be. But guess what, guys? Points at the end of the day count, right? Don't fall into the trap of Juve fans where you're excited about how your coach is playing and the substitutions he's making and this and that and how good Coop Miner supposedly looks in the buildup. Don't fall into that trap. 3 points is 3 points. But yeah, I won't steal the thunder of the whole show. I think we'll obviously get into it. But be happy with three today. That's going to be my prevailing thought.
Yeah, the three is extremely important given the game that we have coming up next, which is a direct head-to-head clash with Napoli. So we'll take it, but there is this feeling of disappointment, which I think is natural for a team that is challenging for Scudetto to have after a home performance against a relegation side that was pure trash. I mean, the first thing that came to mind as far as a question to kick this thing off is there's been two performances that have left me, you know, just really, really disheartened with this team. The Milan derby and this Venezia performance. The Juventus performance doesn't even touch how bad these two were. So I'll kick it over to you guys. What was the more embarrassing showing for Inter this year?
Oof. The more embarrassing showing. Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go with the Milan one just because of the importance of that rivalry. I genuinely thought we were going to win that game 4-0 and get Fonseca fired. And we came out, I mean, so flat and just so uninspired. It was a tough one to even want to get on the podcast and record after that episode, to be quite honest. So, I mean, I think that one stings a little bit more. This one, yeah, disappointing in its own ways, and obviously we'll get into that. But I'm angry with the performance, but not nearly as angry as I was with the Milan game.
I'll go the other way. I think it's got to be the Juve game as an outsider here. The Milan derby, look, it's still a derby game. At the end of the day, what, you guys, forgive me, I don't have the correct numbers. You won like 8 out of the last 9 or something crazy like that, right, where you pretty much have that tie, you know, on autopilot. Guy was coaching for his life. You know, it's early in the season. Anything can happen in that type of match. So, I know what it means to lose one also, so I get where you're coming from for sure. But I think the Juve game, man, after going up to scoring 4 goals where Juve hasn't scored, hasn't allowed pretty much a goal all season, that's a tough one to drop points from an outside perspective.
And I'll take the Venezia match. The amount of chances created and just not being clinical. I thought the energy was terrible. I thought it was such a disappointing and disheartening showing for all the fans that are like, you know, we've had some rough results so far this season, but now we get to close the gap on Napoli. We get to show them, we get to have a big performance against Venezia after they got smacked at home against Atalanta, you know, a confidence builder going into Arsenal. And I mean, it took a handball in the 97th minute for this to not be considered a total disaster. So, you know, even though of those three games, this is the best result points wise, I just feel so shitty about this team right now and the effort that they just put out there. I thought they were done with this. I thought the season had progressed to the point where it's like, okay, it's time to kick into gear. And that was it's disheartening to know that we have a clunker and a stinker still in this team after, you know, going on 4 years under Inzaghi, that we can still drop a game like this.
Can I hit you with 2 cents?
Yeah.
I mean, I will. I do put a lot of stock in the fact that you're going to turn around in 3 days and face Arsenal, right? So Inter wouldn't be the first team to get caught looking ahead to a big match like that. I think you could argue the same for an Arsenal side that lost this weekend. I get what you're saying from a league standpoint. Obviously, you need the three and you want to look good doing it and get your players into form. But I mean, it's been a pretty brutal schedule for you guys to start the year. So games like this can happen. And I don't know if you're going to like what I have to say, but quite honestly, I don't think Inter's played well at all this year, game in and game out. I mean, I think the Atalanta game is the one outlier. And the fact that you're in second place, 1 point behind the league leaders, not playing up to potential, I'm going to call that a huge win. I think you have a right to be frustrated. Obviously, the last couple of years, goals and expectations are through the roof, and that's more than fair. It's more than valid. And great transfer window, great players brought in. You guys haven't done it yet. So to be where you are, playing the way you are, 7 wins out of 11 looks pretty good to me.
Yeah. Atalanta and City were like the only two performances that I think are memorable for Interisti this year. Let me ask you, like, to your point of having not performed but did bring in a couple, you know, good players this summer. Are you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think there's really two things that stick out as far as why these performances are happening. Is it a matter of there's just like constant rotation in the side and, you know, because of the schedule and they haven't been able to find consistency? Or is this the post-Scudetto emotional dump that we've seen the previous two winners have, that has just not manifested itself in a complete plummet down the standings yet?
I think it's a little more of the first. I mean, we're seeing it across the league. We're seeing it across every league. Any team that has quality players is playing a lot of football, right? International over the summer, Champions League or Europe throughout the week. Now this, you know, every weekend, there's already been two international breaks. It's, you haven't really seen consistency or any team really week in, week out dominating, right? City, Barcelona, Madrid, Arsenal, Liverpool. Liverpool looks actually pretty good. But even, you know, Juve, Atalanta, everybody's hot and cold. I mean, we're just not really seeing it. So I'm not concerned. I'd be more concerned if you told me that, you know, you were 8 points off the top and, you know, no chance of progressing in the Champions League. I think, like I said, definitely a right to be frustrated. We've definitely seen teams in Italy coming off of Scudetto the last couple of years regress. But I think there's a lot of runway for this team, and they still have to be the favorite to get it done at the end of the day.
Man, it's so easy to flip me over from negative to positive, but I feel like the fans kind of want to see me pissed off for once. So I'm going to keep my energy for right now, despite your best efforts, and they're appreciated.
I'll turn. All right. We got a lot of show left. I'll turn.
Johnny, I think it's fair to say that a recap is not is not even possible for a game like this, where Inter created so many chances. And also we had a lot of chances go against us. So it'll just be impossible to get into all that. So why don't we just get into some of the main topics for this game? And I think we'll kick it off with the early conversation around this game, which is that Inzaghi decided, with the Arsenal and Napoli games coming up, to play a very, very strong first 11. We're basically, you know, we didn't see any of the big boys dropped. What did you think of the decision to go with a lineup this strong against a relegation side? And do you think, you know, if we had done a little bit more rotation, that those guys would have brought the necessary energy to that this game needed?
Yeah, I don't think I certainly wasn't happy with the starting 11. You know, to go that starter heavy, I just didn't see it. It's like, we've got Arsenal, we've got Napoli ahead. And I'm not saying you don't take the Venezia game seriously by any means, but I think if any game called for heavy rotation and resting your key players ahead of some big matchups, this was going to be it. So to have gone with, you know, I thought it would be a combination of Taremi with either Arnautovic and Correa up top. Maybe, you know, this is a game where you throw Aslani out there. Fratesi could start from the beginning and you leave Mickey just because he's Mickey and he always gets to play. And we talked about it last episode. It would be nice to see, you know, maybe you see what you got in Palacios in a game like this. You throw him in, maybe not in the center back. I think that's such an important position defensively, especially in Inzaghi's system, where maybe you shift Fastoni to the middle. Or put Bisek and then leave Pavard on the right. I mean, you could have done so many different things to kind of keep the squad fresh. We talked about it, just how long the season is. So to go with your usual starting 11, it's like, what's the only thing that's really going to change for Arsenal? That Hakan slots in and maybe, you know, Zielinski comes out? Like, I just don't get it. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that. I doubt we're going to hear from it after the match, but yeah, I was not too thrilled with Inzaghi's thought process there.
Likely Hakan does come in, but the fact that Acerbi didn't see a minute today has me, you know, obviously De Vrij is going to get that start against Arsenal, which has me pretty nervous. The other storyline with this game is that there were several refereeing decisions that had an impact. So Nick, I want to go to you. Which decision was the most egregious for you, or which decision should have been reversed or could have gone the other way for you?
I mean, I'm going to say this may have been the worst refereed game all season that I've watched. Any team, any game. I just think they had absolutely no control of really anything that was going on. I just think it halted the flow a little bit, right? Fouls that shouldn't have been fouls were called. Non-fouls were let go, fouls were let go as no calls. Corners were given when they shouldn't have been. I mean, DeMarco with that assist for the first goal. I mean, that's what VAR is going to take, that little millimeter to, you know, say that, hey, his kneecap was past the pinky finger, so it's offside. I mean, I don't know. We're at the point where I can't necessarily blame the referee. That's just what VAR is going to do game in and game out. But just it's tough to even say, because I felt like watching the game in real time, there wasn't one decision that seemed correct the entire game. That's probably a little harsh. That's obviously not true, but that's just how it felt watching the game. So disaster from start to finish. I don't even know that I could single anything out. I think even the very late goal, ultimately probably the right call, but I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, is that even looked at? So it's kind of just one of those games, you know, you nothing good to say from a refereeing standpoint.
The offside technology, obviously, it burned us today, but Johnny, if you can try to give as unbiased an opinion as possible, how do you feel with goals like this being chopped off by, like Nick said, like millimeters? If even that, because on the second goal, like it to me, it looked like the defender's hand was covering the toe or the foot. But I don't know, where do you stand with this technology? Would you feel the same if it benefited us? If these were the calls, if this is how it's going to be called?
I'm not a fan of these millimeter ones personally, no matter how they go. I get it by the way the rules are put in place that this is an offside. But to me, it's like there was another one where it was the upper body, right? Was ruled offside. This the second one, not the one with Di Marco's kneecap. What does the upper body have to do with anything that leads to the goal? Like that drives me insane always. Whether it's for us, against us, like if I was a fan of another club and I saw that, you know, because my forehead or I'm leaning a little bit more forward, my feet are behind the defender, but because I'm leaning forward to get in a running position to start chasing after a pass that's played to me, I'm offside. It's the dumbest thing. I don't like it. I don't like that the millimeter stuff gets involved. You know, with the goal at the end of the game, I think that's one you look at just because I thought it was a foul more so because of how he went over Bisek and used him to get over him. But then when you see it, I mean, it does hit his hand. That's the only thing that the ball hits and goes in. I mean, you have to chalk that one off. And if it was, you know, for us, I mean, I'd be pissed that's why, you know, but it's the right call at the end of the day. So I wish there was a way to limit just how much VAR has input on some of these things, or if maybe adjust the rules in a sense to make it, you know, your lower half is the only thing that could really be, even if it is just a kneecap, all right, fine, that's offside. But the upper body stuff, you know, like there was one last year, and I forget, it might have been actually Bologna where Orsolini's hand, like because he's going like this, I mean, you'll see this clip, I'm sure Alessandro will pick this one, but when he's going like, and his hand's forward, like, he can't use his hand
for the ball.
But he can't use his hand to play the ball. So how is that offside? Like what impact did that have?
It's not an unfair advantage. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's just so stupid, some of these things. And I really wish that they would look into changing it and make some adjustments because it's just kind of I don't want to go back to where there was no VAR because, you know, obviously there was a lot of times where teams got screwed because they got the call wrong.
100%.
But I also think you're overcorrecting it now at this point, and that's a little too much.
I think the biggest argument you can make for addressing the offside technology, if someone was able to put together like a compilation of the great goals scored throughout history, that VAR would have chalked off. Like the memorable moments in football history that would have been taken away by, you know, this a stupidity or
Maradona. The end.
I was gonna say Nima's legend. He's no longer a legend if you take that away.
Yeah. Fact. But even just like the simple stuff like the hand forward, it is ridiculous. Nick, do you want to watch a game of football where what Dumfries did in the first half was a foul instead of a clear handball by Haps?
No. That's there was so much action in the second half, I almost forgot about that, that exact incident. But that's really where the game probably started to go off the rails, right? I think, like I said, with your last question, I don't really have too much to say in terms of defending the refereeing decisions here. There's just, I don't know, looked like a clear handball to me.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some of these performances here. Johnny, are we done with the Zielinski at Regista experiment, especially if Barella is also on the pitch? Because he's clearly just not suited for the role. There's not a seamlessness that you see with Hakan or Barella, you know, in front of the defense. It just doesn't look good.
I would say the defensive side of things, I did like his passing and his pinging of the balls around. That's what he's known for. And yes, I mean, Zielinski said it himself that he doesn't like playing back there. He's doing it because it's a necessity right now. But if a player knows his own strengths, you can't fault him if he's not, you know, playing up to the standard that is Hakan, which also I think is unrealistic to compare him to, because no one is going to do what Hakan does on the pitch. No one, not even Barella. So I guess you could say, yes, it's done with him, or it should be done with him as a Regista going forward. But again, I mean, things can happen, and unfortunately, he may be forced to do that again at some point later in the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, you know, obviously with Hakan back, I think we all saw the kind of impact that he had off the bench, where he looked like he hadn't missed a few games. He just seamlessly transitioned back into the midfield, which obviously, you know, says some good things for Inter's future, hopefully, knock on wood. Nick, for you, where is Inter at with this front line? Because it looks like, you know, if Thuram is not making the right decisions, Lautaro is just not involved, is it time for Taremi to be getting more playing time? Like, what are you seeing as a, you know, an outsider, no Inter bias here? What are you seeing from Inter's front line?
It's so tough because the two of them start on 99% of teams any given game, right? So to say you're going to bench one or the other at face value is tough to say, but Taremi, I have to say, I said this to you guys, I think last time I was on, every time he plays, he impresses me. You know, he's also, I think, 2 or 3 years younger than I thought he was whenever he came over. But he looks good. And you know what? I'm not mad about this current situation, because I think back to the Champions League final a couple of years ago, where, you know, you had Lautaro and Thuram in a spell of form where they weren't really looking good, and Inter had nobody to turn to. Or not the Champions League final, but I'm thinking that was Lukaku. So I'm sorry, I have my years mixed up. But last year there was maybe it was when they got knocked out of the Champions League. I'm thinking, right, they got shut out.
Yep.
So point is, there was a spell where, like, they weren't complimenting each other. Like, they've done pretty good over 2 years of, like, Thuram goes on a nice little run and then he cools down. And then Lautaro obviously started off the year super hot. And then he cools down. Now Inter have some firepower on the bench. So I think you need to keep that. And like I said, it's tough to bench these guys at face value, but like in a game like this against the last place team with two huge fixtures coming up, now I start to question it, right? So I don't quite understand why Taremi isn't getting more game time. He's, like I said, impressed me every time he's played. Correa or Arnautovic, I'm not going to make a case for either of those guys. I mean, they should have been good to come in if you guys were up 1 or 2-0 in the 60th minute. Nothing more, nothing less. But yeah, I almost think Inzaghi is trying to play Lautaro into form. That's kind of the only sense I've really got from why he started this game, why he pretty much played the majority of it. I think they're trying to play him into form. That's kind of my take.
Yeah, and I think Taremi is going to get the start against Arsenal. So, you know, hopefully he can play his way into a conversation about even benching, you know, Lauti and sort of give him the wake-up call that he seems to so desperately need. Johnny, today was sort of a vindication day for you. Someone who was okay with Filip Stankovic being the backup and not, you know, spending the money on Martinez. And then you have Sommer, who you've supported, you know, since before he got in the building here. Making some ridiculous saves to keep Inter in the match. I'll give you a minute or two here to just wax poetic, I guess, about your own goalie knowledge.
You know, my genius is so strong, it's frightening. People were saying, oh, he's not good enough to be the backup. And I might agree, honestly. I think it would have been too much pressure to be the backup at Inter. However, if for the financial reasons, I would have been fine with it because I thought that he was a good enough goaltender. Goalkeeper. Wow. I'm thinking hockey right now. That's how bad it's going right now with Inter. You know, he's a legacy because of his father and the impact his father had and what he's done for this club. So you're rooting for him. You do want to see him succeed. And of course, it's a little disappointing that he decides to pull out probably his best game of the season so far against us. Some of the saves he made, I mean, were phenomenal. The reaction on the Mickey shot early in the first half, some of the save on Thuram and that where he reached up to the corner of the upper 90 there was just amazing. And then with Jan Sommer, to those people who say that he is turning into Handanovic, when at this age did Handanovic save us in a game like this? Now, he did play terribly against Juventus. I'm not forgetting that.
Yeah. But
we could have been down 2-0 had it not been for him making two huge saves in the moments that he did. And that's exactly what you want a goalkeeper, especially of his caliber, to be able to do for you, is pick you up when you're not able to play at your best. And he did do that for us today. So hats off to him once again. I mean, I could recognize when he plays poorly, but you also have to recognize when he's been phenomenal. And the guy's just a class goalkeeper. And I really do think he's going to go down as one of the most underrated goalkeepers of the last, maybe of so far of the 21st century.
Yeah, I tweeted before the game that I knew Filip Stankovic was going to have the game of his life, because it is part of the experience of being an Interista is you have to watch things like this, especially with that last name at the San Siro. It was very easy to see coming. Nick, I'm happy that you're here to be able to ask you this question. Di Marco with an incredible ball, like genuinely incredible ball to the back post. And I have to ask, given Nuno Tavares' performance this year and Di Marco essentially being our MVP, who is the best left back in Serie A?
Wow. So I was going to say, I can't believe it's taken us almost 30 minutes to bring up his name. That's a question I didn't expect. What I was going to say before you posed this very difficult question to me is I think he's the best Italian player right now. I think, like, full stop. I think he is just the most dynamic player we have. I was, before even the goal, I was texting with some buddies and I was like, it's kind of insane how good DeMarco is. Like, he could have had three or four assists this game, like casually could have had three or four assists this game. But Tavares is off to such a phenomenal start, and he's just got kind of like that personal revenge vendetta going on right now. Like, oh, I couldn't get minutes at Arsenal and now I'm going to come in. You guys have seen me tweet, he's the best left-sided Portuguese player in the league right now. I don't think that can be disputed, even though some Milan fans might argue otherwise. So tough one. I mean, statistically what he's doing, and he's been an insane impact player for Lazio, but let me see him do it for the whole season. Let me see him do it for 2 or 3 years, because DeMarco now has that under his belt. And again, he's just been fantastic. I mean, he put the team on his back pretty much this game.
Yeah. And the degree of difficulty when you see just the amount of defenders that he has to get that ball around in order to get to Lautaro, it was an incredible moment of quality in a game that was only going to be decided by someone, you know, coming up with a little bit of magic, because everything outside of that was just really disappointing. And speaking of really disappointing, Gianni, this was one of the tougher performances for Marcus Thuram in an Inter kit. Just didn't seem to make the quick fire decision in order to either get the ball off his foot, whether it is a shot or whether it is a pass. Is this the last sort of piece of his game that's holding him back from being, you know, a truly clinical and, you know, one of the better strikers in Europe?
Without a doubt. I mean, that's something since he's arrived at Inter, it's been a thing that we've kind of been bringing up and hoping that he would sharpen and be able to improve upon. But yeah, this game, it just seemed like he wasn't sharp. Yeah, decision making was late on everything. He was making the wrong choices. Sometimes the attempt he took in the first half, where he was like point blank really with Stankovic and shooting it wide, but just so violently, not going for placement, trying to go far, but like And then in the second half, where he had Barella coming into the 18 and taking on the shot himself.
That's the most egregious one.
I don't understand how you don't see him, because it's not like there was anybody remotely close. You know, you're wearing these disgusting yellow kits. It should have stuck out like an eyesore there, and he should have just been like, oh, there you are, and just passed it in. Terrible, terrible. So yeah, this, I don't want to say it's his worst performance, but it's definitely up there among his worst performances that I've seen him have in an Inter kit. And I guess the only positive I could take from it, though, is I would rather it happen today than happen Wednesday against Arsenal. So maybe right. He gets that out of his system, and hopefully he rebounds the next game. Although we don't know what Inzaghi's going to do with the starting 11, so I guess that'll be remain to seen as well.
Nick, as the outside observer here, I think for me, at the end of the day, the stat sheet is going to say that Dumfries created some good opportunities. The stat sheet is going to say, you know, Mickey was able to get off his passes and ended up having a goal disallowed that was super close. For me, both of their performances were miserable today. Are you seeing what Interisti are seeing with these two players, or are we being too hard on them?
No, I'm glad you said it. I mean, for Dumfries, I'll get that out of the way. I thought his first half was actually pretty decent. I think you didn't notice him pretty much after the break. So nothing really to say there. Mickey, I was ready to come on the show and trash him a little bit, but then I'm like, oh, I'm probably being a little too hard. He did some things correctly.
No, you would have been right. You would have been right.
I feel better about my gut instinct then, because that's kind of where I was at. Like, if I'm almost wondering, like, does he sit the bench for Zielinski? Is that the answer? Or Fratesi? Or why? I mean, I know it's such a fine line in this middle three here, but like, this dude's 35 years old. Why is he just an automatic starter game in and game out? He still has some good games. I can't knock him for the good things he's done, but I don't know. Like, it just, what is he really doing? Like you said, that one goal that was kind of the turning point where I said, okay, now I can't come on and trash the guy. He scored a goal, obviously got called back, but I don't know. I just kind of lost out there for me. I think the game has passed him by.
Johnny, you're in the middle of retort because I saw Mickey get turned around by Gianluca Busio. I saw Mickey with, you know, us having the ball deep in their attacking third and then just really poor giveaways, like no Inter player even in the vicinity. So I'll let you speak for all Interisti here when it comes to Dumfries and Mkhitaryan's performances today.
You know what? I'll be honest. I don't really have negative things to say about Denzel Dumfries today. I don't. I thought that he did work really hard. There was a ball that he fought for in the corner where he really shielded the ball and allowed it to roll out of play, which I loved the effort there. You know, and that was a long time, like had to be at least 12, 14 yards where he was just, you know, kind of posting up and keeping the man away from being able to get the ball. The pass he played to Mkhitaryan, that should have been a goal. It was it was a perfectly played ground through ball. And for those FIFA players out there. And I thought for the most part he played a pretty good game. I really have nothing. I'm sure there is some things that I wish he would have done differently, but like they don't stand out, where in other games in the past those moments would. Mkhitaryan, on the other hand, I am so done with this guy, man. I was literally typing up a tweet just how finished he was and how that he got, the way he got cooked by Busio, and then of course he scored the goal, and I was just about to hit send and I stopped myself because I saw it coming, and thankfully it was ruled off in the sense that I could have actually still gone through with the tweet, not because the goal was taken away.
It's one of those things, like I don't know if you guys watch any like Law and Order or any of these court shows, like where like, oh, the jury has to disregard that statement, but like, you know, it's still there in the back of your mind, you still heard it. That was that goal for me, where I was like, I was ready to trash the guy. I'm like, oh, he scored a goal. Well, he didn't, but I do know I watched him put the ball in the back of the net, and that was like exactly the feeling I had.
No, 100%. And I was literally going to, I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll just add to the end. I don't care that he just scored. That's literally what I was doing. And then I just scrapped the whole tweet altogether. But yeah, it's, I thought, I literally said in our Inter group chat that it's like, okay, cool. He scored the goal. Now that just guaranteed him four more starts. Like that's it. Like he's going to be rewarded. Like, ah, see, this is why I have faith in Mkhitaryan. You know, he does something good for me every now and then. But it's, I like Nick said, the game has passed him by. He's just making terrible passes. He had one, it was literally right before Busio undressed him, where he played it to just only a Venezia player, like not even an Inter player nearby. And he's just like, oh, here you go. Like, let's start the counter. I need to get my cardio in right now. Like, I just don't get why he continues to be rewarded with start after start when he just makes these boneheaded mistakes. We see when Dumfries makes a mistake, a big one, that he gets punished for it. And I think that's right. We've seen when Barella makes mistakes, he gets either substituted or he doesn't start the next game. He's done, like, Inzaghi has had no problem doing that with Barella. He's done it with Bastoni. He's done it with Bisek. But for whatever reason, Henrik Mkhitaryan has so much built up faith and trust that it doesn't make any sense. And the only thing I can think of is that Mkhitaryan is holding a child of his hostage, and that's the only way he's going to see that child again is if he gets in the starting 11 every single game.
I thought, you know, the thing that I always used to say about Mkhitaryan was he's there for his work rate because he just goes back and forth. But you can't say that this year because defensively he's been getting cooked. I mean, players are flying by him without so much of a meaningful challenge. So I really don't know what he brings into this team outside of, and Johnny and I spoke about this on an earlier interviews pod episode, is eating minutes. Like he just eats minutes and gives other midfielders rest. But outside of that, it's been super poor.
And if you're going to bench him the next game, then that's fine. Then he did the job today, right? So
yeah,
I guess let's see when we see the 11 against Arsenal. Alex, one thing I want to say, I'm sorry not to take too much time on it, but you mentioned his name a few times. Busio's had a really good start to the year, man. It seems to me like he's starting to put it together. He's going to be on a good team next year.
Without question. I think he's been a part of a group of young Serie A midfielders that are really starting to break through, like Busio, Belayan from Verona, Maldini at Monza this year. There's been a good crop of young midfielders. And I mean, if you are paramount and you're, you know, you have Serie A for however long you have Serie A, I mean, this is a kid that you want him to go to a good team so you can continue to highlight him as an American playing in the league. But yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, a couple more questions before we get into the listener Q&A. Johnny, what feelings did you get after seeing a Hakan cameo that was real, real encouraging?
I mean, I feel like we should be able to hopefully get back to the form that we had late last season. You know, I think that we've said it before, that him and Barella are so important to the way that this team plays and the way this team goes forward. So to be able to have them hopefully back on the pitch together for the Arsenal game will be massive. You know, I think that actually relieves a little bit of the pressure for whoever that third midfielder is going to be. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he gets to start. I have a feeling he will. I think that's what this cameo is for. The only thing that I would have hoped for was to get, you know, a cameo from Tejan. I don't know why we continue to not see him out there. Like, this was another game that was calling for his pace to be able to eat up open space and cause, you know, nothing but problems for Venezia. But Captain Canada is once again not leaned upon, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, and this is going to be the last one from me here before we get into the listeners. And I want to hear from both of you guys on this. I thought this was Inzaghi's, maybe his most poorly managed game of the season. And I'm not even referring to, we already spoke about the lineup that he decided to go with. But I thought the move early in the second half would have been, or the moves would have been, Fratesi for Mkhitaryan, move Zielinski over to left center mid and put Barella back at Regista. I would have put in Tejan for Dumfries on the right, and kept Darmian in my back pocket for when DiMarco needed to get his rest. And I would have put Taremi in for Lautaro. It felt, you know, obviously those are not the changes that we got, and it felt like the changes that we did get were late in the game, and probably the only one that had a significant impact was Hakan. So Nick, we'll start with you. Like, where was Inzaghi today as far as his management of the game was concerned?
Welcome to the Inzaghi experience, boys. It's, I mean, not welcome, you're familiar with it, but this is still his MO. You know, this is the one weakness to his coaching is waiting too long, or maybe not. Listen, easy for us to say, I guess, right? His results speak for themselves. He's obviously behind the bench where we're here talking about it, but I think you're kind of right with what you were hoping for. And my final answer will be after Wednesday when we see what they do, or maybe even after next week, because maybe he does know a little bit more than we do, but definitely frustrating in the moment. And I can tell you, I saw this at Lazio for 5 years, so, or however long it was. Just kind of felt like he sleptwalked through the game, and just so did Inter. So we saw that translate to the players. Tough one. You know, I don't really have any idea or any excuse to make for him. I think he just lost the plot in this game. And like I said, be fortunate with three.
Johnny, thoughts on how Inzaghi saw this one out?
Didn't love the 11. Wasn't too crazy about the substitute. Like, if you're trying to see out a 1-0 win, I don't think Fratesi is the guy that you would want to put on for that personally. I agree that I wish, you know, he would have done the Buchanan for Dumfries and then Darmian for DiMarco, and then you could have switched the two when that time came, because we've seen that he trusts Buchanan on the left side more so. But and even you know what, even bringing on Bisek seemed like it was a mistake as well, right? So I don't know if it was just, I mean, obviously it was just to get, you know, fresh legs on there, but it just felt like that he got every call wrong, honestly. Wasn't too thrilled with it. I didn't understand bringing on Taremi for Lauti, because it felt like Lauti was playing a better game than Thuram, but I get it. You know, Lauti's probably a little bit more tired, and Thuram has more, you know, speed and stamina in those legs. So, but still, like, this was a game that I felt that you should have started Taremi and allowed those guys more rest. And then I would have rather had them come off the bench, you know, like break glass in case of emergency type situation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. And I think that's the story of the game. I don't think that there's anything really more to it. It was a lousy performance from an energy perspective. Inzaghi was not at his best. Several players were not at their best. Some tough refereeing calls, you know, and at the end of the day, it is 3 points. This is the sort of performance that I think 4 seasons into Inzaghi's tenure, I think Interisti were really hoping to be past stuff like this. These, whether it be mental or physical, complete lapses in ability and in energy. So let's hope it doesn't carry over. Typically, this is a club who plays up or down to their opposition. So let's hope we see the best of Inter against the Arsenal and Napoli. All right. Let's get into the Q&A here. Nick, you're going to stick around for Q&A?
Let's do it.
Cool. All right. First up is going to be Sean from Alabama. He's got 2 questions. Do you wish Inter would keep some recently recovered players back during the international breaks? And why does Johnny love Alabama more than Vegas? Johnny, let's hear it.
You're going to have to answer to that.
Well, let's start. Those words were never said. When I went to Birmingham on a work trip back in 2022, I wanted to walk into oncoming traffic. So never once have I ever thought that Alabama is better than Vegas. besides, like, I'm working for a winning team right now. So Alabama ain't nothing but losers right now. So suck at Clemson, Auburn, wow, and UAB, and whatever. South Alabama, too, because I know that's where Sean from Alabama went to school. So you're all trash. Okay, we'll get that out of the way. But I guess Nick can answer the first question.
Yeah, how do you feel about when clubs are, they have recently recovered players and, you know, they always end up, they seem to always end up getting called by their national teams?
I'm A-okay with any player that gets called, because that's a huge honor for them typically. And any player that wants to go and represent their country, I tend to side with them, but I also understand who's paying the bills and frustration, but I'm always kind of going to give it to the player when it comes to that scenario.
Yep. All right. Next up, Nico Bucuzzi asked, did you expect this lineup against Venezia? We already talked about that, so we'll get that out of the way. But at a person 1352 says, based on the first half, this came in during the halftime questions, Stankovic seems like a really good young keeper. Should Inter consider keeping him for next year? I'm going to say no, because the scenarios would be Sommer leaves, Joseph Martinez, you made the investment already, he'll get moved up into the first goalkeeper. And then you don't want to have a really good young keeper not increasing his value by just sitting on the bench behind Joseph Martinez. So for me, it's another loan. If he has another impressive season, and depending on how Joseph Martinez performs next year, then you have a decision to make. But for me, next year is not going to be the year for Stankovic to stay at Inter. Johnny, what do you think?
Yeah, I would have to agree. You know, I think Project FTK is still in full force. You got to try to make as much money as you can off these young players. You know, we saw what happened with Carboni not being able to offload him this summer. Now he tears his ACL. His value's tanked. You know, like, we have to do better at selling off these guys and not just loaning them. As much as I love Stankovic and would love to see him, you know, potentially become a goalkeeper for Inter, I don't know. Well, I don't think he's there yet. But I also don't know if it's worth it to take the risk for someone to just sit on the bench, right? We're already kind of doing that with Joseph Martinez. Do we really want to do that again with another young goalkeeper? I don't think anybody would really want that to be the case, where, you know, if we could sell him, put a buyback clause in there for him, I think that would be the right way to go about it. And it's the same thing with, like, really a lot of our other young players. I would want to just sell them off if they're not good enough to be integrated in. It's not worth it to just keep them around for maybe or whatever. Like, the only ones that I could see having any real future are DiMaggio and Barenbrook, but even that, like, that's marginal at best right now. So
it's going to be tough.
And I'll just quickly add, for a goalkeeper, like, it's almost impossible too, right? Because there's only one goalkeeper that plays, right? Yeah, other positions, there's flexibility. You're running for 90 minutes. Like, you're not just getting minutes for the sake of getting minutes in that position, right? You're either the starter or you're not. So definitely tough.
He has a better chance of being Lazio's starter than he does Inter starter this year, given that Provedel has been has that an interesting
rough
season?
Start
Although
to the year.
I think he's played better recently, but there's been a couple that haven't looked great. All right. Unfortunately, guys, we have to skip some of these because we already touched on them. But let's go with at Ronald PS 1993. Why does this team always play back once they get ahead? Why not keep pressing for more goals? That's something I like from German coaches. The best defense is attack, and how the defense has looked this season. Why doesn't Inzaghi push the team to keep going forward? So I do think 7 minutes goes on the clock for extra time, and it felt like the entirety of that 7 minutes was Venezia, like, working their way into our half. And then you see with the last kick of the game, then you see what happens when you're just sitting back defending, because then the last kick of the game, Inter is lucky that it hit his hand. Like, that's what you get for just sitting back. I don't think, you know, I had tweeted after Lautaro's goal that this game is going to need to, because of this, of stuff like this that we saw. Is this like a problem in Italy that we see a lot? This is just not the right strategy. Where do you guys sit on it? Nick, we'll start.
Say you can take Inzaghi out of the 90s, but you can't take the 90s out of Inzaghi, right? Listen, my counterpoint to what you're saying is minutes, like from the time Inter scored the goal to the 90th minute, that game was all Inter. They could have had two or three. So one example, I mean, I think his question is more of a broad question, but I do think Inter tried their best to put the game away. But I don't know. It's kind of like you said, it's just a plague that we have as a country, as a league. Not every team has full 90 minutes of attacking skill in their legs. And that's just kind of reality. I think we have to come to terms with that. You hit a certain point in the game, especially against a relegation side, 3 points are what's most important. So if you have to pack up for 10, 15 minutes, you know, does it suck to watch? Yes. Is it the end of the world? I don't really think so.
Donnie, what do you think?
I mean, no, I would honestly agree with everything Nick just said. Like, I don't think I have anything to add on to that, because that's exactly how I feel about it. You know, like, I feel like that it's easier to do in the Bundesliga because not every team has the ability to take on the bigger teams. Whereas in Serie A, like, I mean, look at how Venezia played today. They weren't great, but they also weren't as bad as we see them to be. Like, they could have they can go out next week and lose their next game 6-0 to, let's say, an Empoli. I don't even know who they're playing next, but, like, you know, they could drop that, but then they can go play Napoli to a 1-1 draw. You know, like, it's Serie A is the most unpredictable, and I would say from top to bottom, the most balanced league in Europe's top four, top five leagues, however you want to look at it. So, like, I don't think we can take those same risks that other clubs are able to take, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah, it is difficult in Serie A because these are all managers that are some of the best in the world. I can only imagine what some of them would do in other leagues. And when we see when they leave, they typically have success. So, they're always difficult to manage, but it is really hard to see that 7 minutes come up for extra time and you're just waiting for something bad to happen. But anyway, so these next two questions are pretty much the same from @IndraHari1908. What should Simone do to improve this team's attitude and bring back the hunger and grinta? And then @LeoTheo1 says, why is Inter struggling to get performances going over these whole games and not killing teams off? Mentality issue or physical issue? What's going on here, Johnny?
I think it's a combination of the both. We're seeing the older players where it's a physical issue for sure. They're just not able to keep up with the pace of the game anymore. And mentality, it's almost like they're complacent. It's like, hey, we got the second star already. That's good enough. Now, I'm not saying that that's being like said in the locker room or spread in any way, but it just feels like they feel like they've already accomplished their goals. And then also, you know, I don't want to get too deep into this, but you could also point to ownership as like a reason why they may have that mentality. If you're not investing and rejuvenating the squad and being able to continue to be competitive at the highest level, guys could just be like, all right, well, this is it. You know, we did what they expected at the bare minimum. We're probably, you know, maybe can compete for the Scudetto. Who knows what we're going to be able to do in Europe. Let's just kind of coast and see where we're at, you know, in January or February, you know. I'm not saying that's the right way to go about it, but if I'm thinking about it as a fan, they may be thinking about it themselves in the locker room. I'm obviously not going to guess that that's exactly what's going on, but you know, like you just won the Scudetto, right? You just got your second star in your mind, or at least in my mind, I'd be like, all right, who's the new like big player that we need? You know, a new center back, a new right wing back, whatever. This is what we need to continue to stay at the top or whatever. And nothing happens. You know, you could be like, well, they're just okay with it. So, like, why are we going to, like, bust our asses out here if, you know, they're not really going to care themselves?
What do you think, Nick? Same page?
I think so. Yeah, listen, there's just some games you're not going to be able to get up for, especially after the hangover of two really good seasons. I hate to keep making the same excuse, but they have to be looking ahead to these two games in front of them. And it's not to say they didn't do enough to get the result today, right? It was something like 20 shots. I think close to 10 shots on goal, right? Goals called back. I think it's easy to say that the performances are worse than the results. I think there's some truth to that, but the results are still there. So is there room for improvement? Absolutely. But it's good that there's room for improvement.
All right. Two more. At JohnFC66, he says, do you think that the lack of finishing will hurt us in the games against Arsenal and Napoli?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to look up. Yeah.
Nothing else to say.
I do want to look up how many games we have gone with underperforming the XG. I don't know. XG is not.
Probably every game.
The end all
be all. If I had to guess, the XG was probably 3 today.
It does feel like, I think it was 2.5 something, but it does feel like we are leaving a lot on the table. Like when they talk in sales, they talk about negotiations and stuff, and you don't want to leave anything on the table. Like even if you're trying to get a deal done, it's like you don't want to pull too much out of your pocket when you don't have to. And it feels like Inter is leaving a lot of meat on the bone here this season. Which is causing problems, because then the media is going to go at Inter when they could be having these against Juventus. It could have been a 6-2 win. It ends up being a 4-4 draw. It does feel like we're leaving a lot of meat on the bone. Whether it's going to hurt us against Arsenal and Napoli, like I said, we are a club that historically plays up or down to our competition. So my hope is that these are the sort of games that, you know, will get us up and have us firing on all cylinders. But you never know how it's going to happen. Sometimes when you're in bad shooting form, you're in bad shooting form, and it's tough to get out of. All right, last question. This is a SpeakPipe audio message from FN11. If I haven't listened to this, so hopefully we don't have to edit it out, but Johnny, just be ready just in case.
Ciao ragazzi, long-time listener, first-time caller. I only watched the last 25 minutes of this game, so I saw Minky's goal that was ruled off. I saw a couple big saves by Stankovic, Lauti's goal, and then the Venezia equalizer that got ruled off. My question is about Stankovic. Stankovic has been playing consistently for Serie A team, even if it's in the bottom half of the table. Meanwhile, Josep Martinez, who we spent $15 million on, has not played a single minute for us. And so my question is, what should we do about this? Because I personally, if we hadn't gotten Josep Martinez, I would have kept Stankovic instead of sending him out on loan. But if since we already spent $15 million on Josep Martinez, do we just cash in on Stankovic in the summer? But then my worry is that it could be a Di Gregorio situation where we send a prospect away and then a couple years later they get scooped up by one of our rivals. Would love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the great work. Love the podcast. Forza ragazzi.
Thank you, FN11. We did. We've talked about this already, but I think given, and I didn't bring up all the questions about Stankovic already in the comments, but I think given all of these questions about him, it seems like his PR is just shot through the roof here. He just made himself probably some money, and his agents probably some money if there's a move coming in for him next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, when we didn't know what was going to happen with our backup keeper situation, we saw that Stankovic was playing a lot of the preseason friendlies and kind of being able to take the reins. And I thought, hey, you know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing, you know, if we had to keep him. Now, it wouldn't have been ideal either, but we would have been okay with it too. And he also did well before summer arrived, you know, in the preseason games 2 years ago. So, or over a year ago, not 2 years, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, he's an interesting prospect. I don't want to put too much hype on it and pressure, because like there's been some instances where he hasn't looked good either, where he's allowed, you know, a bit of a howler in as well. You hope he can, you know, figure it out and continue to grow and improve his game. I would rather have him, listen, if you're going to keep him, that's one thing. But I would rather send him on loan to continue to get minutes and grow. Like, you need to get that experience in Serie A. Like, he went to the Serie A B last year. Now he's playing for a Serie A club. Maybe, you know, next year you loan him to, like, a Genoa, which is a little bit of a higher you know, standard than Venezia, and you see what you got there. And then, you know,
first time anybody's ever said that about Genoa.
First time, right?
A little bit of a higher standard
than Venezia, at least, right?
Yeah, you gotta, for sure.
Gotta give them some credit. yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I would hate to bring him in for then him to just constantly sit behind, you know, a Josep Martinez forever or whatever the case is. It would just be a waste. So,
all right, I think that wraps it up as far as this Venezia game. Inter is 1 point behind first place here. You know, I understand we may not feel like that's the case after a game like this, but the facts are the facts. We still have yet to hit full gear here. And there's a lot of campionato left to play. You know, Napoli lost at home to an Atalanta team that we put four past. You just don't know how it's going to go with, you know, with the campionato. You have Fiorentina off the back of five straight wins. We see how well Lazio is playing. You know, Milan, Roma are plummeting down the table.
Can we talk about Napoli just real quick on Napoli? Finally play someone that's, you know, decent, absolutely smoked. So, but I was told that, you know, one game a week, Antonio Conte, unbeatable. Haha. And then isn't it funny that Fiorentina, once Italiano leaves, they finally learn how to start scoring and they finally start playing to their potential?
Who could have predicted?
It's insane. And then let's look at Bologna, I think, is sitting ninth right now. I wonder why. So hats off to Fiorentina for their rocketing up the table. And I did say that preseason Atalanta would finish second and say, yeah.
You did.
And you're not laughing now, are you, anymore, right, people? Right.
Okay. You did. I was one of the laughers. I gotta say about the teams that you called out there, Gianni. I saw I'm not gonna call them out, but I saw a very popular Twitter user for Napoli Twitter say blame the lack of rest for this performance against Atalanta, which was
Can you please
real
tell
tough.
Me who it is after we get
yeah,
off?
I'll tell
of,
you
of
all
this.
Yeah,
has to be a joke.
Huge, huge supporter. Go ahead, Nick.
The one thing I do want to also say about Fiorentina, completely agree with you about getting rid of the loser coach that I also can't stand. I think we've always been on the same page about that. Their first three games, they drew 1-1 to Parma, they drew 0-0 to Venezia, they drew 2-2 to Monza. Three teams at the very bottom of the league. So had they even gotten off to a little bit of a better start, it would have made, I mean, it's still interesting. They're in top four currently after 11 games, but they would be the fact that they could even potentially be a little bit higher because, you know, if they played those opponents today, you'd have to like their chances.
Yeah. Like they could either be sitting second or top of the table themselves. So that's, I forgot about that.
Also interesting, nobody mentioned Roma losing to Hellas today, but that's okay.
Why talk about trash, you know?
Good point.
I do have to say, like, I was hand up so wrong about Ken. Moise Ken is like,
he's a good player.
He's
got to
get
his head
really
on straight.
Well.
He's another one of those. But like, dude, if people forget, he went to PSG. He scored like 17, 18 goals in three quarters of a season. Like, I don't care who you are. That's not, you can't score 17 goals by accident. I don't really care who you're playing with. So the talent's always kind of been there. Just got to put it together. This could be it for him. I hope it is.
He's been extremely dangerous. I also want to call out Ademola Lookman is up there for Serie A MVP this year. He's been so good and so fun to watch. Someone tweeted that Lookman is who Milan fans think Leao is. And that felt
love that. Give me their Twitter handle. I want to follow them if I don't already.
That felt really appropriate. Yeah. Just a player who's really dangerous and it's actually working out for his team.
And then can we talk about the guy who came off the bench for them and instantly scored a goal himself?
Some people are just starting to figure it out, Gianni. We can't, you know, not everybody's as quick as we are.
I mean,
I don't know what's going to end up looking like the better purchase $12 million from Genoa for one season, or $25 million from Atalanta, and they're going to end up selling him for what, $60 million? So it's a player they don't have to see sell. Succeed.
Yeah, just hopefully they don't have to sell either of those guys, because it's nice to see Atalanta playing at their best. And I mean, kind of funny though now, like when Scamacca comes back, is he going to even have a spot? Really?
No, like he's garbage player.
Might be garbage he might player. Be going back out to Sassuolo at this rate.
Absolutely. Who are you benching? I wouldn't even bench him for CDK.
No, exactly. He doesn't have
a player that Milan could really use right now.
Yeah, funny how that works.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for jumping on here. One question before you give your plug here. As always, provide an update for the interview's listeners. How has this year been going as far as the bets are concerned?
All things considered, it's been going pretty well. It's a difficult season, as we talked about pretty much the whole episode, right? Nobody's really brought it week in or week out. Nobody's been consistent week in or week out. A lot of football being played, but we've started out okay. So fortunate for that. Didn't have a bet in today's game, so I'm pretty happy about that, because if smart. I had the over or an inter-team total or something like that, I would have been livid. But definitely come check us out at Kicks Picks Pod on Twitter, on YouTube. Typically live shows every Wednesday night. So catch us there.
When can our listeners get your Champions League picks this week?
Oh, we didn't. We'll probably be tweeting some out. So follow the pod on Twitter at Kicks Picks Pod. We didn't do a show for it. We may do one tomorrow night. I don't know. I completely forgot. Talked about it all episode and I completely forgot to schedule anything. So shame on me.
Yeah. It's going to be.
Generally speaking, take the over in Champions League. Like, these games have been insane. I personally like the new format. I know not everybody does.
I do too.
But it's created really good matchups. It's created a lot of open play, a lot of goals.
There are some awesome matchups in this week's Champions League. You have Lille, Juventus, Liverpool, Bayer, Leverkusen, Real Madrid, Milan, which should be fun to watch. I don't want to jinx anything. Sporting, Manchester City, and that's Tuesday. And then Wednesday is going to be Bayern, Benfica, Inter, Arsenal, PSG, Atletico, and then you have Stuttgart, who have been a really good team for the past year or so, against Atalanta. So it should be a fun midweek Champions League round. And then I think we're good to go. Johnny, anything that we should talk about to the listeners? Oh, we have a TikTok now. Nico Bukutsi is in charge of that, so make sure to follow us there. Yeah. You think we're good?
I mean, you know what? If you're if you are a true calcio, footy, soccer fan, whatever you want to call it, obviously, I mean, I've said it, and you've probably seen me tweeting about them. But I work for the Las Vegas Lights. We just won our first playoff game. We're going to be playing next weekend. If you have ESPN Plus in the States, you can watch it there. It'd be really cool to have people checking it out. You know, obviously. It doesn't matter what level, in my opinion. I like to watch footy if it's something, you know, that has I have an interest in, whether it was like when I was back in Charlotte, or if I'm watching, you know, college soccer where my cousins played. You know, it's always exciting. So if you got time and you want to be able to check it out, please do, because we're doing something pretty awesome this year, and it's really exciting.
One thing
stuff.
I'll say too, obviously not feasible for everybody, but anybody that ever goes out to Vegas, if you have the opportunity to go watch a game live, it's one of the most fun sporting events I've ever been to, and you get it for like the price of a cup of coffee. I mean, like, it cheap, fun, accessible. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's and obviously, like, if you are going to come out, I could definitely, you know, hook you up. Obviously, the season's coming to an end here, but if you're thinking about it, coming out to Vegas for anything for 2025, man, let me know. Because we're just gonna keep. This is just getting started. We're gonna keep getting better. So.
And we're going to sign off here with just a quick quote that just came through at Mari FC Inter. Daniele Mari just tweeted Lautaro in his post-match interview. He says the first half, 0 minutes of extra time with the game very still. And in the second half, 7 minutes of extra time. So he's seems to be calling out the disparity there. That felt a little fishy when it happened to me when I saw it go up. And it looks like Lautaro also thinks it was pretty egregious for that much extra time to be added on there. All right. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, Forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.